Yeah, we did actually 170K. That's the grand total right now. And the funny thing is, there's still money coming in, even though the funnel closed. And I'm sure we'll get into that a little bit later on. But dude, I mean, the thing just went crazy. And it was actually a bit of a unique concept, something that we hadn't tried before. But we just thought, you know, screw it. Let's try something new. Let's see if it works. And it did.
Hey, what's up? This is Gabe from Legion Beats and MIDI Money, which is where we help music producers start, grow, and scale their music production businesses. Now, if you'd like to learn more about how I was able to turn Legion Beats into a profitable business and how you can join our community of hundreds of producers all working towards that same goal, head over to MIDIMoney.com/go. All right, guys, welcome to the MIDI Money podcast. I'm trying to figure out how to open this because I was like, well, our guest, but like, you can't be a guest in your own home. We've got the co-founder of MIDI Money. We've got my friend. We've got my inspiration for really all this stuff that I'm doing today. Adrian, what's up, bro? Anno Domini, how you doing?
What's going on, man? Doing great. Thanks for having me. Appreciate you having me as your special guest of the day.
Yeah, on the MIDI Money podcast, on your own podcast. Yeah, man. No, I'm excited because this is like, you know, I love hearing other people's stories and I think that's super inspiring. But what I really love is to geek out on how people were able to actually accomplish. What were the strategies? What were the tactics? And so I wanted to, you know, have you back on here because we just did this launch together that did extremely well. We did. What do you have the latest numbers?
Yeah, we did actually 170K. That's the grand total right now. And the funny thing is, there's still money coming in, even though the funnel closed. And I'm sure we'll get into that a little bit later on. But dude, I mean, the thing just went crazy. And it was actually a bit of a unique concept, something that we hadn't tried before. But we just thought, you know, screw it. Let's try something new. Let's see if it works. And it did.
It sure did. And that was 170K and however long it's been now. But I know, I think we'd hit about 160K in 2 weeks. And something that was pretty cool that I had never seen before is we did $10,000 in the first 10 minutes that the cart opened. And just to be clear, you guys, we're talking about selling beats. We're not talking about selling courses. We're not talking about, you know, we do all that stuff, but we were talking about selling beats in 2020, about to be 2021 now. Actually, it's, you know, in like a week, whenever this comes out, it'll probably come out in 2021. But like, you know, there's a lot of people feel like, oh, the market's too saturated. Oh, this doesn't work anymore. Oh, funnels don't work. Yeah, it was cool. But now I've seen 10 other producers doing it, so it doesn't work. Guys, this stuff absolutely works. And I'm just excited to kind of dive into a little bit of the strategy, the tactics, how we kind of put it together so that some of the people watching or listening can do it themselves.
Yeah, let's get geeky.
Let's get into it. So maybe you can kind of like tee it up, just kind of talk about sort of the offer and even like how we sort of think about, you know, what this is, where it's available for this period of time and how that's different from maybe that sort of funnel that you usually got going on and sort of how it fits into the context of your slash our businesses as we kind of put this one together.
For sure. Yeah. So without kind of going way too far back and explaining the whole funnel thing again, but essentially what you and I mostly talk about to producers who are new to the whole funnel thing is what's considered an evergreen funnel. And it's kind of the gateway into your business, right? It's the thing that's gonna grow your leads, get you those opt-ins, and start really building out your business so that you can build that long-term relationship with your customers. So absolutely the first gate into the world of funnels should be an evergreen funnel. And once you have those leads, once you start building your list, once you have those SMS subscribers or those email subscribers, and you have a sizable amount of them and you've sort of primed them, you have a good relationship with them, then every once in a while you want to sprinkle in new offers, right? To keep it fresh and, you know, present them with something new and exciting that's going to be valuable to them that they want to purchase from you. And one of the ways to do that is through a launch, a product launch. And what a launch essentially is usually, so the way that we do the launches is for a very limited time window, you're releasing some kind of a special collection of services, products that are very valuable for your target audience at a very reduced rate. So in our case, it might be, for example, a package of beats that are available only for maybe 1 to 2 weeks at the very most. And it could be, you know, 20, 30, 50 beats for, you know, at the price of one beat. And the reason why that's okay to do every once in a while is because, first of all, it's only available for a very short amount of time. So it's not like, you know, you're offering 20 beats for 20 bucks all the time, right? So it's a very special and scarce event and product. And the other reason why it's okay to do is because it really builds a lot of goodwill with the audience, because it's almost like you're saying thank you to them. That's often how I frame my launches, you know, doing something for the artist community where I'm giving away a bunch of my best content for a very low price for a very limited time window. And if you do it right, so you don't just kind of throw this launch at your audience out of the blue, but if you do it right and you kind of prime them, you maybe spend a couple of weeks before the launch actually getting them ready, dropping more information, building hype and anticipation. And then when this thing launches in that tiny window, you're going to get a bunch of sales in a very compressed amount of time. So kind of think of it as like funnels compressed, right? It's like all the good stuff of funnels heightened, but also all the bad stuff of funnels heightened too. You know, I'm talking about like customer support questions. I'm talking about stress of like technology not working, but at the same time, you're making loads of sales, like, you know, very quickly. And it's a bunch of fun. It's really exciting. And it's kind of what I love, what I live for, right? It's just super fun. I love these kind of launches. It's yeah, kind of like my lifeblood when it comes to selling beats online.
Definitely. No, launch day is always the funnest. It's like you're nervous because you don't know how it's going to go. You put in all this time and energy and effort, like you said, in this compressed period of trying to get this thing out in time. Inevitably, you're going to hit technology problems or problems with the people you're working with or problems with, you know, whatever. Like, it's just inevitable. And when you're, like you said, when you're doing these launches, it's just, it's everything so compressed that it's just more, it's more good and more bad, but it's really fun. Just a couple of things I wanted to touch on that you mentioned was, one of the things you said is, you know, it's okay to do these kinds of bigger discounts without devaluing your brand because it's for a limited time. And also part of what you kind of touched on real quick is there's this story, right? And so the story behind it, why are you doing this? The justification for it, you know, and one of those is, like you said, oh, hey, we really want to thank you. You know, we appreciate you guys. It could be because you're tying it into a holiday or to something like Black Friday. It could be, you know, whatever it is, just having that story attached to it really helps to kind of justify why you're doing it. It will help to have people, for one, not devalue your brand, because it's like, okay, this is why this is available at this time for this price. It will also make people more excited about buying it during that limited time. And that's another thing too, is like the fact that it is available for a limited time, you're really leveraging, you're really using this concept of urgency and scarcity that are like two of your most powerful tools as a business owner, as a marketer, when you're selling beats, because it's crazy. I mean, I know you've seen it. I've definitely seen it where we'll be selling the same offer, right? Let's say it's available for a week. And we're emailing the list, we're telling them about it, they know the price, they know what's included, all that kind of stuff. And inevitably, the last day will be the biggest day by far in sales. And it's just because of that human nature. People don't want to miss out. They're like, I've been thinking about it, but all right, today's the last day. Let me get it today, right? And so that's just like leveraging that human nature. And so that was something we were able to do here, including what was pretty cool was actually kind of leveraging that on the front end as well, which was creating all this kind of hype in the beginning, which was something that I hadn't really done that well before, but on this one, it worked really well. And so I know like part of that for sure was we were able to build some hype for it. We let our list know, right? Both of our lists know, hey, this thing is coming. And by the way, when I say list, I'm talking about, you know, mainly email, but also SMS. And also, you know, social media, letting people know we got something coming and saying, hey, if you want to be on the early access list, go ahead and sign up, right? And we sent them to a little opt-in page where even if they're already on your list or my list, it's just a way of them saying, yes, I'm interested in this thing. And then we also had them put in their phone number. And that ended up being huge because we had, I think it was about 3,000 people get into the early access list. You know, we told them, hey, we're doing this beat pack. I can't remember. Did we say very specifically what was included, like how many beats and stuff like that? Do you remember?
So the way I usually do it is as you're getting closer to the launch, you start dropping more and more information. Hmm. So 4 weeks out, you're kind of vague about it. You just say there's something happening, something big. I want you to be a part of it. You don't want to miss out, that kind of stuff. Then maybe 3 weeks out, you start saying, you know, it's going to be a package of beats. And then 2 or 1 week out, you start dropping more information, exactly how many beats is it going to be? How much is it going to cost? How is it going to be available? Where can you get it and stuff like that? So that way you're just gradually building up the hype, right? First you start kind of vague, and as you get closer to it, you want people to really be super excited and be anticipating the actual launch date. And literally 24 hours before, you want them literally being ready to refresh their inbox every 15 seconds just so they can get that link on launch day. So that's kind of the point, right? To kind of snowball the excitement into launch day.
Yeah, for sure. And it worked like crazy. And I think part of it was we got, I think it was about 3,000 people to opt in email wise, but about half of those put their phone number as well. And so we happened to use something called Yeti Text for SMS that ties in really nice with the ActiveCampaign that we're using for emails. But there's a ton of services that do this. By the way, one very popular text messaging service is called Community. And I actually think Community is really cool for what it is. It's more like really designed to be more like a social platform or more like you're texting people in real time, but you can't do the type of stuff we're doing here where it's things are automated and kind of in a sequence like this with something like Community. So anyways, I just want to like let people know about that. So that's how we kind of set. Yeah.
I would say Community is more like a conversation and Yeti Text is more like a broadcast, right?
Yes. And you know, Yeti Text is two ways because there are some where you literally can only send it out, but it's more kind of designed to be in like, you know, somebody opts in for that early access list and then immediately they get a text saying, hey, be sure to check your inbox. We're going to email you at this time. Like Community won't let you set up that kind of automation because they want it to feel much more natural. They also don't have a desktop app. It has to be on your phone because they really want it to feel natural, which is really cool as its own thing. It's just for what we're doing here. It's not really the ideal platform. And it worked. we did that launch, right? We said, hey, it's coming out, right? Be sure to check your inbox 10 a.m. on Sunday. I think it was, November 15th, I think, whatever it was, that it dropped. And, you know, we let people know a couple things to add that urgency on the front end, because we knew it was going to be available for 2 weeks and we didn't lie about it or anything, but we wanted to make sure people were really excited about getting it right away. So we told them two things. One is, hey, this is kind of like a limited special offer and at the most, it'll be available for this period of time, for these 2 weeks, but we expect to sell out. And so, you know, make sure that you get it in time. And if you buy in the first 24 hours, you're going to get these additional 5 free beats, like essentially another additional little free beat pack. So we had some incentive for people to be like, okay, I want to be one of the first to actually get on there. And it went crazy. We sent out that SMS. We sent out the email. And it was literally within 10 minutes, we had hit $10,000. I was watching the numbers like, I think we're going to hit $10,000 in 10 minutes. I've never seen this before. It was really nuts, but it was incredible to see.
Yeah. And just to remind you guys, this is just to a list of 3,000 leads. This is not to our entire list of like 100-something thousand at all. So you can have a small list, but if they're primed and they're excited and they're ready to go, it can go crazy. And even in my wildest sort of fantasies, when I was doing the math, it's like, okay, so we have like 3,000 people on the list. Maybe, I don't know, 20% are going to open that email. Then maybe another 10% are going to buy. I was like, okay, maybe we'll make like a couple thousand. No, like literally everyone opened that email. Everyone was excited and everyone got all the OTOs, the bumps, and you know, the average cart value was crazy. And yeah, we'll get into some of that as well in a minute. But honestly, that was probably one of the most exciting launches I've been a part of. And I've been doing these for like 6 years. So yeah.
No, me too. It was really fun. So maybe what about as far as like the rest of the order of events of like how we kind of set it up?
Yeah, you mean like from a technical
standpoint? Yeah, like as far as, okay, so we had early access, then it's available for this long, then it closing down and that and reopening that whole process.
Yeah, so this is what the sequence looked like. So we had the pre-launch period, which for us, it was kind of condensed. I think we had 2 weeks or something like that from the point where we first mentioned, you know, something has come into the actual launch date. And then obviously the 24 hours before was like the main time where we were really getting people excited and saying like, you have to do this at 10 a.m. tomorrow. So then we had the pre-launch day, which is only available to that list of 3,000 that had opted in on Sunday. Then on Monday, we did a public launch. So at that point, it was available to the general public, to our email lists. We promoted on social media. We started running some ad campaigns and stuff like that. And then we just kind of opened it up, right? So that second day was also pretty good. Obviously not as exciting and you know, crazy as the first day, but still really successful. It's, you know, to a lot of people, it was still a brand new offer or something really exciting. So sales were still really strong. And then we actually let that run for a 2 week period, which is the longest I've ever done a funnel for. Before that, The longest I'd done was, I think, like 7 days or 8 days or something like that. But actually, I was talking to our buddy Wishmaster, who had done something similar earlier in the year, actually did very well as well. I think he made 113,000 in a 2 week funnel. So I was like, okay, well, let me just try it out. And Gabe and I, sure enough, you know, we set this thing up for 2 weeks it did great. It was really consistent. And what that enabled us to do as well, actually, side note, was to set up some really great Facebook ad campaigns and have enough time to actually test those out and figure out what was working. Because sometimes in like a 1 week launch window, it's really hard to scale your ad successfully because you just kind of have to like dump money in there and hope it works. Whereas like a 2 week window, it's a little easier to kind of see what's working, what's not, and you know, test a few more things. So that was nice. Then at the end of the 2 week period, we actually closed the funnel early. So this is something we said we might do at the start. And sure enough, like 1 day before or 2 days before the end of the 2 week period, we let people know like, hey, this is actually going to close early. It's going to close tomorrow instead of the day after. And again, that caused like a little bit of a rush to the order page, bit of scarcity. And then we got, so we closed it on a Saturday instead of a Sunday as originally planned. And then we got a ton of emails and things like that from artists saying like, hey, you know, I was expecting to buy it on Sunday. I didn't get it. And so half of that was, you know, we want to cater to our audience. And half of that was like our marketing sales being like, okay, let's just push this thing a little longer. So we actually decided to bring it back on the Monday for one extra day, 24 hours. That was it. Like from the morning until midnight, literally you could get the same pack for one more chance, essentially. So to recap, we had a 2 week period. We closed it 1 day early. Then we brought it back, I think a day or two later for one last 24 hour chance to get the offer. Now, after those 24 hours, officially the launch was over, but we were still upselling people who purchased the main package during the sale on some of the upgrades that they might have missed. So we actually had a members area that we had set up. And what that does is once somebody logs into the members area to download their purchase, they actually see all the sort of upgrades, bumps, things like that, that they might've missed during the sales funnel process. And we actually had, I think like three OTOs and each one of those had two order bumps. So we did like a B pack. And then as the order bumps, you could get either the track outs or unlimited rights upgrades. So first of all, what that does is it obviously increases your average cart value. So instead of just buying, for example, like a $20 B pack, maybe someone's dropping $100 in order to get the track outs and the unlimited rights to the beats as well. And then we did additional beat packs in those OTOs. So OTO one was an additional 20 beats, I think. OTO two was like another, I can't even remember, like 100 beats. And then the third OTO, I think, was a recurring revenue subscription thing that we have, our Inner Circle program. So three OTOs. If you go through that entire process as a customer, you don't buy all of them, you still get forwarded to the members area. And then there you're going to see all these sort of sections that might be locked because you didn't purchase a certain upgrade, and then you can still go back and buy from there. So what was happening after the 2 weeks when we closed the funnel was that people were still logging into the members area. They were seeing all these items that they missed, and then they were going back and actually purchasing those. And we did a little follow-up campaign as well with email just to the buyers, and kind of pinpointed, okay, this guy only bought the basic package, so let's try and upsell him on the additional package. And we even rolled in some additional offers that were complementary to what the artist had purchased during the sale that we kind of just made up on the fly and thought would be a good idea and would provide value. So the actual core offer, I don't think we explained this yet, but the core offer that we had in this funnel was a package of beats and some artist features. So the artist doesn't just get a bunch of beats, but actually has some 16 bar verses pre-recorded on those beats by a couple celebrity artists, A-list artists that we worked with to record verses on those beats for the artist. So people like Razzcass, we have Planet Asia, King Crooked, and Corrupt. And so one of the sort of upsells that we thought would be a good idea would be a transfer rights license. Because what we noticed was that a lot of people who were going through the funnel were actually producers, not artists. And they were actually thinking to themselves like, oh, this is awesome that you guys got these artist features, but I want to have them on my beat. You know, I don't want the pre-recorded on your guys' beat because I want those credits. So we thought, okay, so let's roll out another product, which could be a transfer rights license, whereby, you know, if somebody purchases the license, they can now use those vocals on their own beat. So that's just like a little snippet of how you always need to be thinking on your feet, catering to your audience and coming up with products that actually cater to what people need and fulfilling those needs. And sometimes that doesn't crystallize until much later in the process. You think you're doing one thing, but then it turns out actually people are needing something completely else or something that's complementary to what you're offering. And that actually did incredibly well. I think we made another $5,000 or something like that just off of two little upsells that we made up after the actual launch. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, no, for sure. Shout out to Wish. That was Wishmaster also did something similar on his with the transfer rights thing. And it worked really, really well. And I think that that's what you're talking about. You know, how do we create more value? How do we not only come up with an offer in the first place, but continue to come up with offers? That is the big difference. I mean, that's one of the big things we talk about. If you guys haven't, check out the early podcast, like episodes 1, 2, and 3 with AD on there. And where we kind of talk about that, or go check out our free training at minimoney.com/go, where we kind of give the whole foundation of this whole funnel thing. But a big, big piece of it is, how do you create more value for your customer? It's not just, hey, here's another beat lease, because the reality is there's, you know, it's 2 million plus producers on BeatStars alone. I'm sure it's another, who knows, whatever, million plus on the other ones. And all of these producers are all selling it's the exact same product, right? It's a beat lease. And yes, your beats are like, you know, only you make your beats. I get it. But the reality is there are literally millions of other producers. And so how do you differentiate yourself? How can you create more value? How can you compete? Like in that, like, I hate when people say the market is saturated, but as far as doing that, yeah, that is saturated. If you can get the same product from 2 million different people in the same place at the same price, that is saturated. So how do you create an offer? How do you give more value? And so in this case, what we did was, you know, you had a connection to where we were able to get some of these artist features, and we were looking at, well, what are the different problems that we can solve for our customer, for our potential customer? Well, one of them for rappers and singers is they want to get their music in front of more people. Well, one way to do that is to have a feature, or they want more credibility. Well, here's a solution to that. And I don't want, you know, producers watching this or listening to this think like, oh, now I need to go get artist features. Like, sure, cool, do that if you can, that's fine. But that's not the point. We've both done, you know, huge launches without that. It's more about, how can you add more value? Maybe that's through, you know, a training that you include. Maybe that's through other services like mixing and mastering or artwork or whatever it is. But the important part is that you're putting together an offer that's actually solving more problems and a higher level of problem than just a beat lease like everybody else. And that's part of why we're able to do so well. Like, there's nobody, like, trust me, nobody's doing $10,000 in 10 minutes on a beat store with beat leases. It just doesn't happen, right? Nobody's, and I think on that first day, we ended up doing like $35,000 just that day. Like, people aren't doing that on a beat store selling a beat lease. It's just not how it works. But we did that because we had, you know, that much more value. But here's the thing, even if you have the most valuable thing in the world, nobody sees it, it doesn't matter. So I want to talk a little bit about, like, how do we actually drive traffic to it? We really had a few things that were the big sources of traffic, which was affiliates or partners, using our existing messaging channels and lists like email and SMS and Facebook ads. So just to kind of like touch on each of those a little bit, affiliates is still one of the most slept on things in the producer community. It's now just starting to shift, you know, really from our community, I would say, you know, and now, you know, as we're recording this, Temper Beats is doing a launch and I'm pushing traffic there. I know you are too. I think Wishes as well. I know, you know, other producers are doing this as well. But basically the whole concept is that you are sending your audience to an offer that you know they'd be interested in, and you get a percentage of the sales that you refer, right? So in this case, Temper's doing his launch. He sends me a special link. You can use different software that'll track it. I tell my audience, hey, check it out. There's this beat pack. It's a great deal. It's an actual offer with a bunch of stuff that's going to help you. Go ahead and hit this link and go grab it. My audience is happy because they got an opportunity to get something that's going to help them. Temper's happy because he got some traffic he wouldn't have got otherwise. And I'm happy because I just made a bunch of money and I don't even have to fulfill on the product, right? And that's what we did on this too, is we had, you know, an affiliate program too, where we had other producers, including Temper, you know, sending his audience to us and Wish and Billy and, you know, Big Shot Beats and all these other people. And so now we're able to essentially get free traffic. It's, again, a benefit to their audience, benefit to our audience, benefit to us. It's, you know, it's a win-win-win. And that's just like one of the most powerful ways to drive traffic.
Yeah, you know, it's crazy. I think this year I've made like mid 5 figures, literally promoting other people's stuff. Literally just sending out like 2 or 3 emails about an offer that I think would be attractive to my audience, and that someone else spent days, weeks, putting together, building the funnel, you know, creating the content, making beats. And literally all I have to do is just hit up my list. And that's the power of the list as well. That's why it's so important to build out that evergreen funnel, start getting those opt-ins. Once you have a sizable list, you can leverage that in a lot of ways. And it doesn't always have to be churning out your own offers. You know, so many producers tell me like, hey, I don't have a second offer. I don't have a third offer. What should I do? I have this list of like 1,000 people that's just sitting there. I don't know what to do with them. Like, why don't you promote someone else's stuff and take a commission? That's a great way to provide value to your audience, and you're making money by doing not that much work, let's be honest.
Yeah, it's the best. It's so great. And it's great that now we have this sort of next generation of producers that are all in, because that's what they see. They're like, yeah, that's what we do. You know, that's kind of what we do in our community in MIDI Money. But it's still one of the most frustrating things to me when I try to reach out to producers who maybe have been doing this for a little while that aren't a part of it, because I think there's just a little too much. People are like a little too precious with their list. Like there's so many producers where they're like, oh yeah, I can't, I'm not going to do an affiliate thing, 'cause I can't, it's too spammy. I don't want my audience to know I want to sell them something. Like I can't do that. Or like, oh, I released a product last month, you know, so I sent out like a couple emails selling them that thing. So, you know, I don't want to send something out that's selling something this month. And it's like, bro, like you are missing the point. Like the reason why your audience is there, the reason you have that list is because they want those opportunities. If they can get a feature from King Crooked for $47, they want to know about it. Like that's good. That's providing value for them. That's how you're making money. That's, you know, it's a win-win-win for everybody. And so, you know, of course you don't want to be spamming your list constantly. And you want to make sure that the way that you're messaging it is a way that shows the value. And it's not just like, hey, buy this, right? But if you're afraid to actually sell to your list, then you're kind of missing the point, and you're not serving them. You think you're being nice to them, but you're actually not. You're not giving them those opportunities. So that's one thing I would say is like, stop being so precious with your list. Like look for these opportunities, try these different things, send people to different affiliate offers. Obviously it's gotta be something you believe in and you trust, and you know that, you know, where you're sending them is gonna be valuable and be good. But past that, like just chill out. Like you're not that special. Just send it out.
You know, I have dozens of emails in my inbox right now just saying like, thank you for always letting me know about opportunities. And that's value, right? That's value for your list. You're not spamming them. You're not trying to hard sell them on something. You're just telling them like, hey, my buddy Wishmaster, my buddy Gabe, my buddy Temper has this offer right now. You might be interested. Check it out. You get literally 50 beats for $10. You know, it's on your rent for a week. And no one's going to be mad about that, right? If somebody told you like, oh, hey, you can buy a Samsung TV down the road for $10. Are you going to be like, why are you telling me? You know, you're just spamming me, bro. Like, stay away. No, you're thankful, right? You're like, oh, cool. I'll definitely check that out. Thank you for letting me know.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So that was, long story short, a big source of traffic for us. That definitely accounted for a big chunk of that, whatever we're at now, 170,000 plus of revenue. The other big one, of course, we already kind of talked about is email and SMS, you know, our old list. We've been acquiring these lists for years using like our front end evergreen funnel. And like you just said, that's the value of that. And sometimes people get frustrated because maybe they set up that first funnel and it's like, ah, I'm just barely breaking even, or I'm not really super profitable. But when you're building that list, a lot of times the money comes later. It's like, okay, I built the list, and you should try to monetize it. You know, don't be afraid to sell them in the beginning, but you might break even, or you might even lose a little money on the front end. And that's okay, because I know I can send a couple of emails because you're doing a launch, or Wish is doing a launch, or somebody else is doing something, and I'm going to make a few thousand bucks right there just off those emails. So that's the power. Not to mention, we're going to talk about Facebook ads in a second. You know, I had my business manager shut down, then my personal account was banned from running Facebook ads, then your personal account was banned from running Facebook ads. And so that's one of the many reasons why relying solely on these other platforms, whether if it's a paid ad platform or social media platform, is so dangerous, because if we were completely relying on that, and I'll talk about it in a second, we were able to kind of find a little workaround this time. You know, we would have been screwed. But that whole first day where we did the $10,000 in 10 minutes and the $35,000, whatever it was that day, it was 100% just our own list. There was no paid traffic. I don't even think we had affiliates that day, actually, right?
No.
So that was 100% our own list. That's the power of the list. That's why it's okay if you break even or even lose a little money as you're building that first funnel. Like get that list grown, and then you start really, the profits really come from that second offer, that third offer, whether if that's yours or an affiliate offer.
Yeah. And I just want to mention, by the way, the Facebook thing was like nothing to do with something that we were doing. Like literally Facebook just has the ability to literally just take away someone's account for whatever reason. And in this case, it was just the algorithm misidentifying our accounts for, you know, some crazy stuff. And I had to upload my passport because it turns out I didn't have a passport uploaded to Facebook. It's just stuff like that, which is stupid, right? And imagine if your entire strategy is Facebook advertising. And all of a sudden Facebook decides, hey, something is off here, we're going to shut down your account for the next 3 months. Then what do you do, right? And even though we did use paid traffic for this launch as well, that made up maybe, I want to say like 25% at most of the revenue. So that means we still would have had a six-figure launch just off the back of our list, right? And everything else is just the icing on top.
Yeah, no, exactly. And so luckily, basically by, you know, hope Facebook isn't listening, I signed in as my girlfriend's account and I was able to sort of get access to your business manager. And so we were eventually able to run ads for a little while. And they did well. Like we spent about $30,000. I've got it pulled up here. $30,616 is what we spent. And that accounted for, you know, well over $50,000 in revenue, just a little, you know, directly that were attributed to those Facebook ads. So we had a good return on investment. It was a great source of traffic. And so it's like, you know, there's some nuance there. We're not saying don't do Facebook ads. That was great. That's free money. That's awesome. And if that's the only, if you're 100% relying on that, then you're going to get in trouble. And so just something, you know, with the Facebook ad, just a couple of things to touch on without getting super deep on it. Cause I can geek out on that alone for hours. But, one of the things is, you know, when you're doing a launch for a limited time, as opposed to that ongoing, you know, evergreen funnel, everything is faster, especially those ads, because, you know, when you run an ad, it sometimes takes 24 hours to get, to even get approved, right? So then you have to like get it approved. And then from there, you have to decide what works and what doesn't so that you know what to increase the ad spend on and which ad sets and which ads to shut off. And so you need to get that information really, really quickly to be able to make those decisions in time to benefit from them, because you have this small window of time. And so basically what that means is I had to do a pretty big budget on each ad set. So we were doing, you know, anywhere from 30 to about $300 a day on each ad set. And we had it, you know, a different given time, like, you know, as many as, I don't even know, 10 plus ad sets. So, you know, I think we were at, you know, probably some days, you know, around 3,000 or 4,000, maybe some days it was 1,000 or 2,000 a day. So we're spending a lot on ads, but just to be clear, I was watching them very, very closely. And so on day one, I start spending that money, but I'm watching it. Once we're, you know, even $75 into that ad set spending, I'm looking at it and I'm seeing, okay, are we getting any sales from it? How's it looking as far as, you know, how much is it costing us to put that in front of people? How much is it costing us to get people to click over? How much is it costing us to actually get a sale? What's the return that we're getting on those sales? And if it's not working, I'm shutting it off quickly. So don't think that, you know, that $30,000 we spent was like, you know, we just showed up with a duffel bag full of $30,000 and threw it at Mark Zuckerberg and it's like, let's go, let's see what happens. Like, it's not like that at all. It's, let's start with, you know, a few bucks essentially and watch it really, really closely, see what's working, what's not. If it's working, let's increase the ad spend or duplicate those ad sets. If it's not working, let's shut it off quickly. And that's the process that you do for a longer thing, but just know when it's a launch, you're doing it really quickly.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. It sometimes feels like the duffel bag though, doesn't it? Like you're just dumping money and seeing what happens. So it's funny because I'm almost hesitant to give the advice of just like, you know, spend a bunch of money, test things out, because I'm so used to telling producers start with like $5, you know, a day or two later, if it's moving in the right direction, put another $5. And it's a very long time window, right? And you just do it gradually and carefully to make sure you're not wasting any money. But because you only have a week or two to you know, see results, sometimes it is just like throwing things at the wall and seeing what sticks.
Yeah, for sure. And that's, you know, just like everything we're talking about here, sort of the disclaimer of this shouldn't be your first funnel. You know, all of this is a little more advanced. It's because of the timing of it, because of the scale of it, because of all that stuff. So start with that front end funnel, you know, go check out that training, minimoney.com/go and learn how to do that. And then, you know, layer this in and the stuff that we're talking about, you can still apply a lot of the same concepts, but you still have to start there for sure.
Yeah, definitely. It helps if you know what you're doing and you already have some sense of roughly what's going to work for your audience. And the only way to do that is through experience. So having built your evergreen and having run those ads for several months, maybe you're ready to do this kind of a thing and you know, have more of a chance of having positive return on your investment.
Yeah, no, for sure, for sure. And so, okay, so now we've got our offer, we've got our funnel, we're driving traffic. Here's kind of like the unsexy part, but it's really important is everything is elevated, including your customer service. So if you're used to answering 2 emails a day, if you're used to answering 20 emails a day, when you're scaling up like this, get ready to answer 10 times that, maybe even 100 times that amount, you know, on those busy days. And so when you're doing that, you want to think about, okay, well, how, first of all, just being mentally prepared for it is part of it, because it can be exhausting, right? And then how can you also, what can you do to automate certain things, to delegate certain things, if you are at that point where you're ready to, you know, bring on a team member, even if it is temporarily or for, you know, part-time. And also, how can you actually stop people from asking those questions in the first place by answering the question before they even ask it, right? So maybe can you touch on a few, any combination of those things?
Yeah, so I think preparation is key. And chances are most of your customers are going to have the same questions, right? It's always going to be some combination of, do you have a refund? What rights do I get to the beats? What genres are they? That kind of stuff. So just be prepared. Literally just write out all the questions. You can even use a tool like Help Scout, for example, which gives you a little embeddable widget you can put on your funnel page answering some of those common questions. You can also literally just have a text document up and copy and paste from there into emails when you answer them. Or you could use what Gabe loves, a little app called Text Expander, which is literally a tool where you just enter a short string of text. For example, let's say a combination of three letters, and then it automatically types out an entire sentence or combination of sentences for you. And you can program that to literally an infinite amount of combinations. So that definitely saves a lot of time to do something like that. Another part of it is also, you know, Gabe kind of mentioned this is potentially outsourcing some work, because at the end of the day, do you really want to be stuck, you know, spending hours every single day answering customer support questions? In my case, maybe. For some reason, I always think that's a great idea. But, you know, if you're used to it, and I am, I usually will be able to know what a customer wants within like the first three or four words of an email. So I don't even read the entire thing anymore. So I just copy and paste the answers over. It's pretty quick. But you might want to look into just, hiring some of that outside talent to answer customer support questions for you, even if it's just on a part-time basis for like the 2 weeks that you're running the launch. And I mean, it's pretty easy to train them, because as I said, if you're prepared, you already kind of know what questions people are going to answer. And, you know, it's probably very limited training that needs to go into hiring that support person for a short period of time to help you out. And trust me, your first launch is probably going to drive you crazy, but just hang in there and get through it, and it'll be worth it.
Yeah, no, for sure. And that, it's funny. We, you know, you and I kind of have one of the few places where we do things differently, because I think there's a lot of things we do very similarly, is I tend to, you know, I've got this big team and all these like systems in place, and there's advantages to that, right? Like, for example, if I'm doing the customer service, I put that in quotes, I'm not really doing it. I have a team. I even have, you know, Joe, who's on my team, he's sort of like the head of customer service. And he's even at this point hiring and training the other people who are coming on, which is awesome, because I don't have to do it. On the other hand, the reality is that's a huge expense, right? And so you tend to kind of go on the other side of like, well, you just do it and you're efficient and you're you know, got the discipline to knock it out. At the same time, I would argue there's probably better uses of your time at this point. But there is a trade-off. And I think that's important to know of finding that balance. Cause I think that it's not just, you know, I tend to talk more about like, you know, how can you delegate things? How can you systemize things? And I do believe in that. But the reality is you do have to find that balance and know that, hey, if you're doing that, you have to pay those people. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, for sure. As I mentioned, you know, if I was just starting out and it took me like 6 hours a day to do customer support, then obviously I would look to be outsourcing that, because I want to be spending those 6 hours doing something productive. But as it turns out, like at this point, I can condense it pretty quickly. I can get that done in maybe 1 hour. So instead of paying someone else 6 hours, if I can use 1 hour of my time to get the same work done, maybe that's cheaper and maybe it is a good use of my time. But yeah, I totally get your point. I feel like there's like a healthy balance between your model of just having a huge team and my model of having two or three people and doing more work myself and saving more money. I feel like on balance, you know, maybe we cancel each other out. I don't know.
No, I think so. I think there's a sweet spot in the middle. I think we're both maybe a little too far one way or the other. There's probably that sweet spot, because as grazed, you know, I wouldn't trade it for the world. Like, I love having the team. I love the freedom that it gives me. I love the input that I get from them. And the reality is my profit margins, you know, are different than they would be if I didn't have that team. So it's something to keep in mind. What else as far as mindset? Cause I feel like that's important. Like it's fun. You know, I love to talk about the wins and it was exciting. Like once it was launched, the money's coming in, it's like adrenaline going, like it's great. But I know, like, just setting things up, you know, and trying to make everything work, there was a lot of frustration along the way and just like, how am I going to make this work? I don't know. Maybe can you touch on that a little bit? Because I don't want to just make it seem like, oh, yeah, it's all great. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, as we keep saying, it's intense. Trying to build out a launch funnel, you know, if you've ever built a funnel for your evergreen before, it can be a process. And for a launch funnel, it might be even more complex because you're potentially building out 3 or 4 OTOs, a bunch of, you know, order bumps, and then you want to make sure everything's integrated and working well. You want to try and preempt any issues that might come up. You want to try to systematize all the customer support as much as possible. So it's a lot of planning. It's almost like setting up a business from scratch every single time that you build one of these new launch funnels, right? So be prepared to put in the hours. For me at this point, I have, you know, I kind of have it down to a science, so I can probably knock out a launch funnel in like 1 to 2 weeks of intense, like, you know, morning to nighttime work. But if you're doing your very first one, like it could be a month of work or more. And it's not just about building the funnel. It's not just about linking the technology, testing the technology. It's also about, you know, making sure your email sequence is written, because the last thing you want is to launch your funnel and then have to be like typing up emails on the fly, right? So you want to make sure that you already have the entire sequence ready to go in order to get the most out of it. You want to have some kind of like a game plan as well. For example, for us, it was the follow-on sequence after the funnel and all that kind of stuff. You know, it takes a lot of preparation and thinking and planning. Maybe you also want to have your ad creative already written out. So again, you don't have to be like fumbling around in the middle of having to do a bunch of customer service and then also being like, oh, damn, I haven't set up any ads yet. Let me just type up some crap in Facebook right now. So the more you plan ahead of time and you put in those hours, the smoother the launch is going to go. And here's the thing about launch funnels. No matter how much prepping and planning you do, something is going to go wrong, right? Your ads might be shut down. Your funnel might break, and then you have to, you know, go in and fix it on the fly. Maybe your email gets shut down because you're sending out too many emails in response to customer service stuff, which has happened to me too. So all this kind of stuff, you know, you need to factor in that time and be prepared to do that too. And if you're trying to like do everything on the fly, like during the live launch, it's going to be really easy to stumble. So put in the work ahead of time. You're going to get frustrated, of course, but it's worth it at the end of the day. And once you actually get to the end and you're looking back on it, it's addicting. Like, honestly, all these producers I've seen this year put together their very first launch ever. They're already talking about like, oh, I'm going to do one more next month and then another one, you know, next year. And, you know, you must have to rein them in and remind them that, remember, the backbone of your business is growing your list of leads and focusing on that and providing value and building the relationship. And then this is just, you know, a couple of times a year, you throw in these special launches to really make them unique and scarce and special. Because if your entire business model is just like, hey, let me just do launch after launch after launch, then of course your credibility goes out the window because it's not unique, it's not special anymore. And also you're forgetting what the core principles are that we teach at Mini Bunny, which is, you know, customer first. Think about serving your customer, providing value, building relationship, all that good stuff. And that's how you really make those launches hit, by doing that first, putting in the groundwork.
Yeah. Not to mention it's exhausting. Like, you know, yes. And sometimes you're doing it, it's like crazy. You got the adrenaline, and right after you're like, we're going to do this again. But one thing I would recommend is give yourself a little space for a couple days. You know, if you are a very driven kind of person, sometimes the tendency can be like, okay, cool. Great. 170,000. Great. Whatever. Next. You know what I mean? Which is can be my default sometimes is, and it's useful to take a second and actually reflect on that and be like, oh my God, like, could you even imagine, like, if I told myself that 2, 3, 4 years ago, you know, you're going to have these artists involved and you're going to make this amount of money and all this many people are going to be buying your beats and using them. Like, my mind would have been blown, but there's something about, as you make progress, when you have that kind of mindset that you don't look back enough. And I think it serves both ways, right? It helps because that's how we're able to keep doing the next thing, because we're like, okay, what's next? What's next? What's next? But at the same time, if you don't take a second to be like, oh, wow, I did that. I put a lot of work into that. And, you know, and it was, luckily it was successful this time, but even if it wasn't, like, man, like, I built that, I put the time into it, I created these systems, I learned from that, you know, take a second to kind of enjoy it for a minute. Otherwise you're going to get burnt out.
Yeah, no, I think that's super important. And there's one there's one thing which is like resting on your laurels. You don't want to do that. You don't want to be like, hey, I made 170K, never going to beat it. I'm just going to retire, move to the Bahamas, live off interest or whatever. But you do want to give yourself breathing space, like you say, and just, you know, acknowledge the fact that you accomplished something amazing. And it doesn't have to be $170,000, right? It can be, maybe you just launched your first funnel. Maybe you just made $1,000. Like, that's incredible. You know, think about where you started maybe a few months back. I mean, when I started out, my big goal was like, oh, if I could make like a, I don't know, like a $30,000 a year salary from selling beats, like I've made it, you know? Yeah. If you told me then I could make six figures in a week or 2 weeks, I would have thought you were crazy. So sometimes, yeah, it's just important to put things into perspective. Actually, today or like yesterday or something like that, I was somebody sent me a picture, an old customer of mine, from back in the days when I first started selling beats. I would literally send out like physically mailed CDs, CDRs, and like a printed out contract. And I was selling them for like $20 a pop or something, making like $100 a month. And just him sending me that picture saying like, dude, I've been, you know, buying beats from you for 17 years. And just seeing how far I've come from back in those days, it's just incredible. And it blows my mind. And sometimes it's important to get that slice of humble pie and just be like, wow, this is amazing what we're doing.
Definitely, definitely. Got to have that perspective. One more thing I wanted to mention, or doesn't have to be the last thing, but you know, as far as like revenue versus profit is something that I think comes up a lot. And sometimes people assume, oh, revenue means profit. Or they go the other way and they go, oh, you made that much revenue, but I bet you made $0 or whatever. And so it's true, like revenue does not equal profit. Now on this one, we actually did really well, which was great. You know, the ad spend was $30,000. Obviously there was other costs involved between customer service and you know, paying all the producers and everything like that. But this was very profitable. But you know, one thing that I'll mention here is like with MIDI money, you know, we had a couple months there in, what was it, like March or April, where we literally had our biggest revenue months ever, right? Because we were spending all this money on ad spend. And it was a combination of stuff between, you know, not keeping good enough track of the ad spend and not really have, you know, really on me, not having all of my data, all of my numbers in front of me the right way and not understanding what all those numbers mean at scale and how that's different than when it's, you know, when you... I'm trying to say a lot here, but when you're spending, you know, if you're making $10,000 a month and you're spending $10,000 on ads, it's pretty good. You feel like, okay, I'm getting about a even return on ad spend. Yeah, technically I'm losing a little bit of money because there's other expenses, but I know that those customers are going to end up buying more later. So I feel pretty good about it. When we were doing like what we're doing in March and April on the MIDI money side, you know, we spent, God, I think it was like almost $200,000 in 1 month on ad spend. And we had a positive return on ad spend, believe it or not, which is like amazing, right? We had, you know, $200,000 plus in revenue for at least one of those months, but ultimately ended up losing money that month. Our biggest revenue month was literally our worst month of profit. We actually made negative money that month because at scale, now your merchant fees and refunds and all these things, customer service goes so much higher that the math is different. So I guess my point is there's some nuance there. Like, yes, revenue does not equal profit. That's super important to understand. Like the revenue number is not the profit number. And it's also, you know, it also doesn't mean that there's no profit to be had. Like this launch was extremely profitable. So it's just a matter of understanding it, of doing it the right way, of not letting those numbers get away from you. And then you can be profitable, because ultimately being profitable is really important. Because that's the money that you actually get to keep.
Yeah, no, I think that's really important. And honestly, running a business like we do, factoring all the different costs, expenses, accounting, all that stuff, if you're getting like a 30% net profit margin, something like that, you're doing really great. So if you see somebody bragging like, oh, I made $100,000 in beat sales, you know, potentially that could be $30,000 or $40,000 in net profit. So just bear that in mind too. That's important.
Yeah, exactly. That's good. You know, and something to think about too is even if, okay, let's say it's 30%, you know, in my case, I have this huge payroll, right? Of this team. And so that's not profit, but there's benefit to that. That means that my friends, my family, these people that, you know, whatever, they're producers or engineers or customer service people, those guys are getting paid. Now that's not profit, but that's still something I'm proud and happy about. So there's a lot of nuance. There's a lot of different levels and layers there. And I see people talking about, you know, and it's my fault, right? I talk about revenue a lot And that's part of how we sell MIDI money, is being like, check it out, we did $170,000. That's awesome. So I get it, but I think that there's, it's hard for people to see that nuance and to know, you know, they, I feel like the perception is either, oh, there was no profit there, or almost an assumption that it's all profit. And there's just, there's a lot of gray area there. There's a lot of factors.
Yep. Things are never as bad or as good as they seem, as they say.
It sounds about right. Man, what else? What else? Is there anything we didn't talk about here as far as it's related to the launch, or just even anything else you want to
chat about? One thing that I always just like to mention as a side note is like, okay, so now that you have this launch funnel, it's going great, you're making a bunch of money, obviously make sure that you're doing something wise with that money too, that you're investing it in something that's actually going to pay you dividends. Because in music especially, the tendency is to get a big paycheck, and then what you go out and you spend it, right, on something that's probably going to devalue your money greatly. For example, a car or a pair of sneakers or something like that, right? So one thing that we always like to mention to our MIDI money family as well is be smart about your money, because money comes and goes in music. You might have a fantastic year or a fantastic month, but maybe the next year is not so great, right? So you want to make sure that you're covered. And you want to make sure that you're putting your money, at least some of that money, into some kind of a revenue growth model. For example, investing it in real estate, putting it in the stock market, putting it in a high yield savings account. Anything that's better than going out and spending all that cash on something that you don't really need, or just hiding it under your mattress. Because guess what? Then inflation is going to devalue your money over time too. So that's something that I think is really important to mention, especially to younger producers. That you need to be smart about your money and think about, like, you know, long-term, where do I see myself in 5 years, 10 years, 20 years? And how do I plan for that? You know, if you want to retire at 50 or 60, if you don't want to be that guy who's sitting in your bedroom making beats at 65, then maybe you start thinking about where do you put your money to actually grow that pot long-term and make it count.
Yeah, for sure. Super important. And something that I've been learning a lot from you, which has been great. Revenue does not equal profit. But then once you got that profit, like you said, if it's just sitting somewhere, you're actually losing money because of inflation. So that's key as well. This is awesome. Anything else we should get in before we wrap it up here?
I just want to mention, obviously, if you guys haven't yet, go check out midimoney.com/go. Check out the training that's going to teach you how to set up an evergreen funnel, which is going to be the backbone of your business. And once you start building that list of leads, start building that relationship, then you start, you know, building out an ecosystem, a real business around that, which could include doing these kind of launches and doing fun stuff like that too. So that's the first step though.
That's it, AD. Appreciate you, bro.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the MIDI Money Podcast. If you're not subscribed already, please be sure to do that right now on YouTube or wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you enjoyed this episode, I would really appreciate it if you do me a quick favor and rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts, or comment and like the videos on YouTube. You know, those ratings, reviews, those comments, they all show that people are getting value, helps the algorithm, and helps get this podcast out to more producers. So it means so much to me if you'd be willing to take a couple minutes to do that. Oh, and if you'd like to learn more about how I was able to turn Legion Beats into a profitable business, and how you can join our community of hundreds of producers all working towards that same goal, head over to midimoney.com/go.